Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL draft as it has just concluded. We will also be talking about the NBA playoffs. And of course, we will have our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And lastly, do not forget to follow the social media page at JTimeSports. I repeat, at JTimeSports for all of your breaking news, updates, and coverage. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Oh, I will admit, it has been far, far too long. And for those of you who are Shrek fans, yes, I said it like Shrek tells the donkey. They're going to the land of far, far away, donkey. It has been far, far too long, people, that I have been away from you guys in the audio format. So you guys have had the YouTube show on a fairly regular basis, but you have not had the audio show in about a month. So hopefully that is or 2 months, actually. So hopefully that is rectified. That schedule had a bunch of scheduling problems and all kind of stuff was going on. So it was, you know, a lot was happening. However, enough of that jazz. We are back. The Just In Time Sports Podcast is back on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And I think perfectly in time to try pretty much get you through the NBA playoffs. And you guys know after the NBA playoffs, we take about a couple of weeks off, and then we come back for the crunch time of the damn NBA season, right into NBA training camp, NFL training camp, rather. So you pretty much know how that goes. But the NFL draft happened just last weekend in Green Bay, Wisconsin. First of all, shout out to Green Bay for the amazing turnout. They broke Nashville's record for turnout. Now, Green Bay, Wisconsin itself only has about 100,000 people in the city. It is the smallest American sports city, the smallest professional American sports city. The very oddity of the stadium literally being in a neighborhood. So you're driving in this neighborhood and then out pops Lambeau Field. So players, you know, role players have said that before, that you know, one of the things like not knowing where you are situations, head down or whatever on the bus, and you're in this neighborhood, your head's to the left, and then you turn and you're staring at the side of Lambeau Field, you know, and it's just one of the weirder scenes in the league. It's cool and it's weird and it's individuality. It's like stadiums more and more are being placed in major parking lots, and their own metropolitan areas are being created around them, and so on and so forth. It was like enough space was carved out in this area to build Lambeau Field in the parking lot, and that's it. Because again, regular houses, we're not talking mansions, like literal regular houses are just, you know, across the street from Lambeau Field. Again, one of the cooler environments in the NFL. But shout out Green Bay for breaking Nashville's record of the most people to attend the draft. North of 200,000 for sure. I think it went north of 300,000 in order to break the record. So, again, huge, huge shout out to Green Bay. And the draft was an interesting one. The draft was definitely an interesting one. From start to finish. You know, like, it was even drama with Mr. Irrelevant, because the Patriots end up trading into the last spot of the draft to get Mr. Irrelevant. That was drama all over the place. And we came into this draft looking at the fact that, hey, odds are this draft will have a lot of trades in it. The reason why is, for the first time in so many years, everybody came in owning a first-round pick. All 32 teams had a first-round pick in the NFL draft. And it's not like the later rounds where there's compensatory picks or whatever. The NFL draft, the first round is the only round that's guaranteed to have 32 picks. Now, you know, there's never, you know, the exact amount of picks it should be, because the NFL hands out compensatory picks for loss of free agents and so on and so forth. So they begin to add picks. So it's never 224 picks like it should. It's how you end up north of like 270 and stuff like that, because, and the number changes every year because of the amount of compensatory picks that are handed out for that season. So, the top four of the draft went pretty. The names were standard. How we got there was different. So, Cam Ward to the Tennessee Titans was set in stone for months, so much so that at his introductory press conference, Warren Moon unretired the number one and allowed Cam, and going to allow Cam Ward to wear it. Part of Warren Moon's reason was the Oilers uniforms that the Titans wear every so often to honor their Houston past will no longer be worn. So Warren Moon was kind of like, okay, since technically no Oiler, it would never be worn by an Oiler again, he would unretire it for Cam Ward and allow Cam Ward to wear one, who's been wearing one as far as I mean, since I know since the Carnage word, definitely in Miami, he's been the number one. And so Warren Moon blessed him and allowed him to wear the number one for Tennessee. And then the big drama happens at number two, or the first of the initial big dramas happens at number two. In which case, the Jacksonville Jaguars say, screw it, throw caution to the wind, and they go up and get Colorado two-way star Heisman winning Travis Hunter with the second overall pick. Now, Mel Kiper and others have lamented the Jaguars' decision to give up so much capital to go from 5 to 2. I am a believer that Travis doesn't make it past 4. He doesn't. He doesn't get past us. I feel like if he's at the 4th pick with New England, he's going to New England. I think New York picks Abdul Carter either way. So it would have been on Cleveland to either stick and pick Hunter or to pick Mason Graham. So I ultimately think that that move was going to have to be made anyway, to an extent, to get Travis Hunter. Plus, if he's going to play both sides of the ball, he's worth it. And according to Travis Hunter, he himself was put on the phone with both coordinators after the draft. And then the Jaguars put out media saying he has special plans, that Travis has a special plan for himself, and the Jaguars have a special plan for him, which leads me to think he'll play both sides of the ball substantially. Now, does that mean he's 100 snaps on where is he 130 snaps a game in the NFL? No. But also, the NFL game doesn't really have 130 snaps. You might get 45 to 50 snaps in the NFL on both, either way it go, because they, you know, the NFL game is notoriously slower, and that's where a lot of the players are like, he can't play in the NFL, da, da, da. And the guys, the young guys are like, yeah, he could. First of all, it's not nearly as physical as it was 25, 30 years ago. Second of all, the game is slower than the college. So he was averaging 120, 130 snaps in college. If he could play every snap on both sides of the ball and wouldn't get to 120 snaps. He'd play both sides of the ball and get to 120 snaps, as opposed to that fast-paced college-style ripping and running where they're snapping every 20 to 25 seconds. You know, some people as low as 15 seconds. And he's still playing all those snaps. If he can do it there, he can do it in the NFL. I think he'll end up playing probably 90% of the snaps at receiver and probably 75 to 80% of the snaps at corner.
I don't see him being a first down corner. So if you're playing Baltimore and they're in twins, I don't see Travis Hunter being on the field. Or they're in, you know, 22 personnel. I think he'll be in 11 personnel, 10 personnel, 0 personnel type corner. I don't think he'll be a 31 personnel guy, 13 personnel guy, a lot of 12 personnel, depending on the pass tendency, because that's a snap you can steal him. Instead of him getting blocked and being on the field, he could be sitting down getting Gatorade, getting treated. So I think it'll be very team dependent how much he plays on defense, but I do think that he will greatly be used on offense. I think he was primarily drafted on offense, trying to give a boost to that offense led by Trevor Lawrence. And also, I believe that the Jaguars also drafted a running back, so they're trying to give Trevor Lawrence a chance there. But it is definitely an interesting move there by the Jacksonville Jaguars, and one I completely agree with. And then it gets kind of boring again. Abdul Carter goes number 3 to the Giants. His biggest controversy was he wanted to wear Lawrence Taylor 56. Lawrence Taylor told him, heck nah. He was cordial about it, but hell nah was the message. And then Will Campbell, a.k.a. Baby Arms, a.k.a. T-Rex, goes 4th overall to the New England Patriots. And then Mason Graham goes to the Browns. So the Browns pick up an additional first-round pick in 2026, which could be huge in a very quarterback-rich draft. Also a very talent-rich draft. The draft is supposed to be especially at the quarterback position. But there's supposed to be a lot of talent there outside of receiver. Receiver is supposed to be awful in 26, really great in 27. But, you know, receivers come out of nowhere all the time. So who knows who pops out, who stands out. But, of course, the NFL draft story is the Shedeur Sanders story. Now, he came in as a top 10 consensus pick by most people's estimation. He was only given like a 5% chance of not being a first-round pick. I mean, he was all but decided of being a first-round pick, whether that is somebody's initial pass, those first 9 or 10 picks, or it's a spin back, and someone trades them to the end of the first round to grab them to secure that fifth-year option while saving $20-25 million on the front end. You know, that was what a lot of analysts, myself included, had him going. And if you watch the YouTube show, the YouTube mock draft, Chris from CL Smooth Gaming had him as the 9th pick. You know, I had him as the 9th pick, especially when Derek Carr's shoulder was out. I was like, it's easily Shedeur Sanders as a 9th, maybe even 6th. I mean, he was as high as 2 to Cleveland. People like Skip Bayless said he should have been number 1 over Cam Moore, but he was as high as 2 to Cleveland. 3 was a possibility to New York. 6 because of the Tom Brady connection. And no one really thought he would get past 9, which New Orleans, who needed a quarterback, Kellen Moore needed his own guy. Derek Carr's not going to play anymore for the Saints. And that is the perfect opportunity to get a relatively cheap quarterback, 4 years, less than $40 million. That is relatively cheap per year. And that was going to be how it went down. And then the drama started. Cleveland, like I said, works out the deal with Jacksonville. And even at the 5th pick Mason Graham. Okay? Vegas decides to go with Ashton Jeanty. Cool. New Orleans decides to draft Kelvin Banks. When New Orleans drafts Kelvin Banks, there is a video of Deion Sanders just kind of shaking his head. Because I don't know if that's a shake my head if I was promised certain things and that's not true. I don't know if that's a shaking of the head that's saying my son's going to be here a while. I don't know what that shaking of the head was about, but whatever it was, he clearly was affected strongly by New Orleans picking Kelvin Banks Jr. It's almost to the point of whether, like, was he told, we're going to get you at 9? Like, there's obviously, to me, some sort of back channel discussion between Deion, Deion and Shedeur and anybody else that steps in his way. Like, to me, there's obviously something going on with that situation. But regardless, I just knew he wouldn't get past 9 in New Orleans. He did. He continued to fall. And fall. So then the New York Giants trade up 25. And everybody in the world is going, myself included, well, that must be Shedeur. Because there's nobody else worth trading up to 25 for. They came about 10, 12 spots. So we're like, oh, that must be Shedeur. And they must be jumping before anybody else could jump. It was Jackson Dart, a quarterback from Ole Miss. Now, you can sell me Jackson Dart. I may not buy it, I may laugh it out the building, but I will attempt to have you sell it to me. The next three quarterbacks off the board are as follows: Louisville's Tyler Shaw, Alabama's Jalen Milroe, and Oregon's Dylan Gabriel. Under no circumstance will I allow you to attempt to soil the reputation of my brain and the internet. I mean, that was an absolute travesty when those three went in front of him. Like I said, you could sell me Jackson Dart. I wouldn't necessarily buy it, but I'd have the argument. There is no argument for there's no argument for anything else. You know, he said, like I said, we can discuss it if it comes down to Jackson Dart, but Shaw, Milrow, and Gabriel, there's no conversation to be had there. But the overarching question is true: what happened to Shador?
How did we go from potentially the number two pick in the draft? Skip Bayless at number one. I'm not going to go there, right? Cam Moore's been the number one pick for months. How did we go from potentially the number two pick in the draft to fifth round? Okay. It's going to start off with some precedent here. Quarterbacks are rarely picked in the second round. Tyler Shaw is like, there may be one a class. Because usually if you draft a guy at 40, specifically a quarterback, you do what the Giants did. You're going to say, forget picking 40. We're going to get that fifth-year option. We'll trade 40, 118, and 170-something, or a fifth next year to go from 40 to 30 and pick up the fifth-year option. So that way we have this guy under our control for four contractual years, team option, two franchise tags. He's 30 by the time he even has a legit chance at real free agency, or he's 28. 20 to 30 now. It's a quarterback. All right, cool. But we have him on the team for 7 years at least. That's had worse two coaches. You know what I'm saying? So you're having that stability at the position in your mind for at least 7 seasons minimum. And no one has gone the full. Kirk Cousins ran the gambit. Well, he did the 4 years. Then he got franchise tagged. Then he got out and went frenzy. He's the only quarterback in recent memory to run the full gambit of the contract. And even he did it from a 6th round pick perspective. He didn't have the franchise tag. So that is what was interesting about Shador Sanders. Once you get out of the first round, second round picks being unlikely because that skill guys. 3rd round picks are usually dual players. 4th round, 5th round is where quarterbacks return. So people are like, well, I was getting a 2nd round pick. That rarely happens. Okay. Image issues. It is clear to me, at least from what was presented back to us, that no teams thought he was an NFL starter. At least nowhere early. Now, maybe he ended up one. Maybe they could project in the perfect system with the right acquisitions, blah, 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 that he is a starter for a few years, not amazing, blah, 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 and go on and so on and so forth. Cool. I have Shador Sanders the ability to start his rookie season. However, once you get to the point where you're saying he's a backup for us, now what is the worst thing to be in the NFL? Is a celebrity backup quarterback. But Tebow, when Tebow left Denver, Tebow struggled to find a job. Not only because he wanted to start, but number two, you couldn't just bring Tebow in because as soon as the quarterback plays bad one series, you're hearing, we want Tebow. We want Tebow. We want Tebow. Or you go up 13, 14 in the fourth quarter and you hear Tebow, 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 Tebow. And that is the literal last thing you want. You do not want a celebrity backup quarterback. So now that begins to work against him heavily. You also have the fact that he had a tendency to hold the ball way too long in college. Now, I'm also the believer of I watched them play in college. If Shador didn't hold the ball and run around from sacks, they would probably not win a game. The fact they won as many games as they did, including one where he literally dodged multiple sacks and was still fading left, flicks it, through the rain in overtime, right into the corner of the end zone. So, yes, are there flaws in the game with Shedeur Sanders? Absolutely. I wonder how long it's going to take him to break out of the tendency of trying to scramble and run around for everything, because Caleb Williams struggled with that his rookie year, where he was able to dance and dodge and prance and prod his way around blockers and, I mean, around defenders, and that's just not possible at the NFL level. Not really. Not for a non-special athlete, because the guy who's 6'5", 280 is just as fast, if not faster than you, and he's used to moving laterally and changing directions quickly. So, I think that Seattle goes in with Milroe because they're looking at Milroe's day one instant dual threat guy. I don't understand Tyler Shaw. I don't understand Dylan Gabriel. I just don't. But both of those guys were picked in front of Shedeur Sanders. I don't understand. There is rumors of collusion. If it was collusion, it was designed to humble him. If there was collusion, it was designed to make sure that people watched day three. If it was collusion, it was designed to sell a lot of tickets to Cleveland. And again, I am a proponent of conspiracy theories to an extent. That was not a conspiracy theory. There was no one against them, so on and so forth. So, I mean, absolutely a wild day. Crazy, crazy day. But the main question is, why Cleveland? Cleveland is the perfect spot for him. You saw what they did, was able to do with Deshaun Watson when healthy. I love Kevin Stefanski. Joe Flacco ripped off a lot of games last year. And so, you know, I enjoy the fit they have in Cleveland. They're going to continue to put offensive line together, continue to put weaponry together. Defense is going to be vital. So it is going to be a very interesting situation in the dog pound. They report that Shedeur is not the starter. It's going to be very hard to be in Cleveland for a while if they tell you that Shedeur is not the starter. And what now? Now, simply, he has to go to training camp and ball out. He's a fifth-round pick. He'll get an invite to rookie minicamp, so on and so forth, but it's completely up to him now. How we feel and what we think is irrelevant, because now he is an NFL player with NFL talent, NFL GMs, NFL scheme, and it is entirely and totally up to him. And I'm sure I'll keep an eye on whatever team he plays for, but it is entirely up to him. All right, but quickly, who won the draft? And when there's a winner, there's got to be a loser. So who won the draft? The Patriots won the draft. The Patriots drafted incredibly well. I think one of the sneakier great picks in the draft is Stevenson. He's going to be a guy that's going to run the ball in the committee. He's not going to be every down back. You know, Kansas City, he's not going to see him 30 times a game. Kansas City might see him 15 times a game, 12 times a game with three passes. And so you get situations like that where you don't necessarily have, you know, you don't have to have a stable of running backs, have a triple A minimum quartet of running backs. You can constantly rotate in, especially with that system. And New England did that when they got Trevion Henderson. They also picked up Will Campbell. Like I said, they also picked up multiple guys who grayed out to either starters or near starters their first year on campus. So that is huge for us. And then that's it. I thought I had a... Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. And Philly also won the draft. When they didn't rebuild, they just simply reloaded. So Philly was able to win the draft there, picking in all their spots, all big names, which gives me a lot of cause to pause at times that they will indeed behave. And then, of course, again, as a winner, it has to be a loser. So the first loser in the draft is Atlanta. I'm not mad at Atlanta picking Shedeur Stewart. He's a combine warrior. He's one of those guys where if you're a D-line coach in D.C., you can say, "Coach, I can fix him." I mean, then you just kind of blindly draft and pick. I mean, you don't want to acknowledge you did it, so you're going to blindly draft and pick. I mean, that's the truth. All right, and then the Philadelphia Eagles need to stand up for their team as well in the good section. But in the bad section, we have the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know, I got a little off rails there, but we have the Atlanta Falcons. Again, I don't mind what they did in the draft position-wise. They needed DBs and needed edge rushers. They picked both up. The problem is both edge rushers, and they were both safeties. So not necessarily the position group in the DB room that you need. And also, the Falcons traded a good amount of draft capital for the right to draft another player at a position they already drafted. So that was highly frustrating there. So I can only imagine how Falcons faithful felt seeing another edge, seeing the amount of capital you gave up for an edge rusher. And then the Bengals. Everything about it depends on Shamar Stewart. The Bengals triple down. I mean, the Falcons triple down on having good safeties. But the Bengals, everything depends on Shamar Stewart. They went out to fix their edge problem as well, along with potentially replace Trey Hendrickson. And again, every single thing revolves around Shamar Stewart. Shamar Stewart is average. It's to be an average class. If Shamar Stewart is exceptional, it's to be an exceptional class. It's just that simple. For the Cincinnati Bengals, I need to find an offensive tackle. But the great job all around by the NFL GMs. Nobody was made to look dumb. Now, there was a couple of things, decisions that I wouldn't have made just because of the future, because of how heavily stacked up that QB class is. Having a high pick in that class could mean ransom from somebody. So that is definitely important, and what a great draft, what an amazing draft it was. Kind of our taste of football until August, or at least if you watch the UFL. But up next, we're going to have our NBA playoffs and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. As now we jump into the NBA playoffs, which last time we talked wasn't even on the near horizon. As we're still in first round of the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk about this more on the YouTube show as well with T-Mail and Jai on the JTS After Dark show. But we are also going to talk about it right now. So just want to look at all the standings, and we're going to get into in-depth stuff with a little bit of the series stuff, series by series. So we're going to start off with the West. We have our first person in the conference semifinals, and that would be the Oklahoma City Thunder. They wipe away the Grizzlies 4-0 in a sweep. Actually, not that shocking of a sweep. Now, people say, oh, that could have happened to anybody. No, the Grizzlies were a bad matchup for the Thunder. Because Shai played horrible, like most of this series. And I think that if the 8 seed was the Warriors, if the 8 seed ended up being the Timberwolves, because you know that last game they were all like a game apart, weird tiebreakers everywhere. If the 8 seed ended up being somebody other than the Grizzlies, I believe that Oklahoma City is probably 2-2 with them. Because Shai played absolutely god-awfully terrible. But ultimately, the Grizzlies were without Taylor Jenkins as their coach. Ja Morant gets hurt in game three. And again, the Thunder had beat the Grizzlies by 19-plus points in the regular season a game. So them blowing them out in the playoffs was not shocking, because it was the same exact matchup. And now you get a less good coach, no offense. But it ain't Taylor Jenkins. And whoever, I think Adelman or whoever the name is of their coach, you clearly get a not nearly as talented coach. And especially given the time situation, you're not really installing your own stuff. You're kind of running new stuff they're not used to, so on and so forth. So again, it's a situation where Oklahoma City had the perfect first round matchup. It's almost, in the words of Nick Wright, it's better than a bye. The reason why it's better than a bye is you were able to play on the court. You were able to, those are probably the four worst games that Shai will play all playoffs. And you won all four of them, because you played one of, if not the worst team in the playoffs. I mean, the only team probably worse than them right now is Miami. Miami was a 10 seed that literally played their way in. So that's probably the worst team in the playoffs. But they were easily the worst team in the West, probably the second worst team in the playoffs. And you were able to, like I said, get basically all of Shai's bad games out of the way without it costing you anything. So now they get a week off for the second round, and the team they're going to play is in an absolute dogfight because it's the winner of the Nuggets and the Clippers, who are currently tied 2-2 in a war as it heads back to Denver for game for a pivotal game five. You're going to hear the stat of the next few days because it's only series 2-2 going into tonight. So I'm recording this on Monday at about 6:30. So you guys, by the time you guys hear this, summer's also be decided. It may be different. But right now, as it sits, only one series is 2-2, and that's Nuggets-Clippers. Actually, outside of Warriors and Rockets, they're the only series that could be 2-2. But the Nuggets-Clippers head into it 2-2. And you're going to hear the stat, of course, 71% of the time or something like that, the team who wins game five of the 2-2 series goes on and wins the finals. Goes on to win the series, right? And that's going to be a popular thing you're going to hear over and over again. This game is valuable beyond belief. It is a very vital game for the Clippers and the Nuggets. And I say this because if you're the Clippers, you're like, dude, we could have been 3-1. And if you're the Nuggets, you're like, dude, we could have been 3-1. Both of them could have easily been 3-1. And honestly, Denver could have swept. Because Denver, one of the games Clippers won, Denver had them down, really down, and they came back. But vice versa, the Clippers had Denver down really well one game, and Denver came back. The Aaron Gordon buzzer beater dunk was insane. That's a game where the Clippers look back and go, damn, that's how we lost. But also, if you're the Clippers, you're probably going, well, we probably should have lost the game anyway. We were down a lot. And if you're Denver, that's a game to me that makes you nervous. Because it's a game you put in your title, like, okay, we won it, but also we probably shouldn't have been that close to them. So that's a situation where if you're, you know, it depends on your perspective there. If you're a half empty or half full kind of guy, if you're a half full, you're like, hey, we got the win. We got the win, we're out of there. And if you're a Clippers half full person, you're saying, well, we charged back from 20 something down. And if it's not for the luckiest play in NBA playoffs history, we go into overtime and probably win that game. If you're half empty on both sides, you're Denver going, it took the luckiest play in NBA history for us to survive after blowing this massive lead. And if you're a half empty Clippers fan, you go, my God, man, are we just supposed to lose the series? We're 0.2 seconds away from, you know, legitimately probably having a really good chance of being up 3-1. And now we go into their building 2-2. So it's a plethora of, you know, it's a plethora of things in that series. To me, this is the best series going right now. It is a war down there. You've got historic performances on both sides. Kawhi Leonard looks to be in form. If you haven't seen this, Kawhi Leonard is probably the Toronto Raptors championship. And Nikola Jokic just showing why he's the best player on the planet. Shot after shot after shot, play after play after play. I mean, he's injured. He's wearing a brace and a sleeve. He doesn't care. He's going. So just absolute kudos. All around in this series, it's interesting to watch, and it's especially interesting because Denver doesn't have their coach. They're running with an assistant coach as well because they fired Mike Malone after years of battling with the GM. They finally fired them both, and so it's interesting watching this chess match between Ty Lue and the Nuggets assistant coach because it's kind of you have no tendency. You know, you're kind of learning what he wants to do kind of as you do it. And it's very Jokic-led, which throws even more monkey wrench because Jokic is playing kind of off feeling, you know, because he's kind of coaching, if I could return, coaching, leading, and playing off feeling as opposed to a strategist. And there is no set strategy. So that it's incredibly interesting watching them go back and forth as far as chess piece. To me, the most shocking series right now is the Lakers and Timberwolves. And the Lakers are down 3-1. They split. For the Timberwolves, it is as beautiful of a series as you could possibly imagine. You split it on the road, you win both games at home. I mean, that's the underdog, or that's the lower seed manual. Split, hold home court. Because you go back in game five, up 3-1. That's what the Minnesota is. They had three, the Lakers are in a spot, they could be saying, damn, we could have swept. Because you win, okay, no, you get blown off the floor in game one. So, no, you could be up 3-1 because both games in Minnesota, you had good second half leads and you let Minnesota win both games. So, instead of being up 3-1, heading back to LA, ending it in five, you're going to LA, down 3-1, you're probably going to win game five. I don't see the Lakers going out in five. I don't think the NBA will allow the Lakers to go out in five. I don't see the Lakers going out in five. Game six is the game. It's back in Minnesota. Ants put on a show both second halves in Minnesota. It is a situation where if you are the Lakers, that is the game. If you're the Timberwolves, that is the game. I'm saying it now because we won't talk before the series ends. The winner of game six wins the series. Again, I don't believe the Lakers lose game five. I don't think it's possible. I do, however, think what is very possible is that the Lakers win game five. It comes down to game six. Whoever wins game six wins in LA in game seven. Because either the Timberwolves are going to win it in six, or the Lakers, you're going to tell LeBron and Luka you're 48 minutes away from the second round against either Golden State or Houston. Both of which, if you're the Lakers, you're feeling pretty good about beating. Golden State don't have the offensive firepower to outside of Steph and Jimmy. You would also look at that series if you're the Lakers and go, man, Dre gets LeBron, Jimmy gets Luka. Who's guarding Reeves or Rui? You know what I'm saying? If you make it out. Also, if you look at, if you end up being Houston, if you're the Lakers and you make the comeback, who, you know what I'm saying? Amen Thompson goes to LeBron, or Brooks goes to LeBron, Amen goes to Luka. Who's got Reeves? It's kind of, but who's got Reeves has been himself over these past couple of games. He's been not himself. And so that's allowed Minnesota. They are wing defender short, but the problem is that wing defender is doing a decent job on Reeves, who's just not looking like himself right now. And they're also in need of a big. I mean, this series proved they need a functional center. Jackson Hayes is not functional. Do they need Anthony Davis at center? No. Do they can have somebody as dysfunctional as Jackson Hayes? No. If they have somebody in the middle like Clint Capella, the Lakers are probably up 3-1. It's just that simple for the Lakers. I mean, they are a functional center away from being up 3-1. But they can't make a center. They can't create a center. That center is going to have to be Jackson Hayes, or they're going to have to play small. And so J.J. Redick went a very bold strategy of not subbing in the second half, and I think it cost him in the fourth quarter. And Kendrick Perkins kind of said what I said. When you went up 10, that was your moment. You know, when LeBron sat for a minute 38 seconds, you could have done 2 minutes and 38 seconds. You could have done the old calf sub. About 30 seconds, right around a minute, whatever. A minute 30 becomes he subs out next whistle. He sub him out. You get him back in right around 10 minutes up in the fourth. So it only may be 2.5 minutes of game time max. But it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes of real time because you get TV timeouts, you get breaks, you get probably free throws at the end of the half, you get a quarter change. And so it ends up being 10 to 15 minutes of real time, and the clock only lost 2 minutes. So that's, I think, J.J. Redick was a rookie coach mistake in a big moment. His lineup was rolling. He trusted those five. He probably kept asking Luke and LeBron, are y'all good? They both kept telling him yes. And so he's kind of rolled with it. That was a rookie moment from J.J. Redick. But so the Lakers are down 3-1. And then Rockets and Warriors are playing a pivotal game four tonight. Jimmy Butler comes back after missing game three. A Warriors win. Which could come back to haunt Houston after a pelvic contusion. The Warriors, Jimmy Butler comes back to play for the Warriors in game four as the Warriors look to take a commanding 3-1 lead over the Rockets. So it could very well, the bracket could end up being the 1 seed, the 5, the 6, and the 7 seed in the West. I mean, like, it's very much on the table right now of how the West could look. Oklahoma City could wake up as the only top 4 seed in the West. And then Clippers will go to Oklahoma City. So then the Timberwolves are hosting the second round, or have home court advantage in the second round. I mean, that's like, it's crazy, but that's very realistic right now that Oklahoma City could wake up in 5 days as the only top 4 seed left in the West, which is the total opposite of the East, because in the East, the guy was about to finish off the Heat. There's not much to talk about here. Very similar to what Oklahoma City did. They're blowing the Heat off the floor. even if the final score doesn't say it, at no point do you feel like the Heat were ever going to win any of these games. And I feel like that's what matters. Like, at no point did it feel like the Heat was ever going to win these games. And so that's what matters there. They're blowing the Heat off the floor. They're going to get rid of them tonight. It's going to be a sweep. Okay, Pacers and Bucks. Pacers and Bucks. First of all, I want to say my condolences to Dame. Damian Lillard popped his Achilles tendon, his left Achilles tendon. At this stage and age of his career, and Chris Haynes already saying Dame's going to attack rehab, and Dame's, you know, determined to come back and be a great player and contribute to winning and blah, 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 right? Damian Lillard, as it sits right this second, like today, as I'm recording this, is 34 years old. By the time next season starts, he will be 35 years old. The Achilles injury is typically what is known as a 12 to 24 month injury. 12 months to get active again, another 12 months to feel like yourself. That would place him after around his 36th birthday. Sorry, Damian Lillard, it's over. Now, could he come back and be 17 a night? Sure. But coming back and being a heavy contributor to a title team, unless he just, like I said, signs some cheap little deal with the Lakers. Because even think about it, if he's out 12 months, that's next playoffs. It's not going to start in the playoffs. So your best bet is to do it in 9, come back around January, and play, do a 3-month ramp up, basically, to be ready for the playoffs. I mean, that's the only way, rationally, I think he pulls it off. To be honest, I don't think he pulls it off. I just don't. It was one of the moments where it was like, dang, that's how it ends for Dame. You know, it was like instant. As soon as he saw him sitting on the floor, and then he got up and did the drop and did the dead foot walk, it's like, dang, that's how it ends for Damian Lillard. And especially, it was especially sad in the moment because he just sat on the floor. And there was a timeout for him. None of his teammates came and got him. Like, one teammate came and picked him up. And he was sitting in the middle of the floor for, like, it felt like an eternity by itself. And just sitting there. Both teams were at the bench, like, cleared away. And he was just sitting there. And then one teammate came and picked him up, and he did the dead foot walk to the sideline, then he was carried out from the sideline from there. But it's just like, dang, that's how it ends for one of the best point guards of a generation. So yeah, Damian Lillard's injured. He won't be the same. It's sad to say, but he won't be. But then that leads into the series itself. So the Pacers have been controlling this series, and Dame just came back from deep vein thrombosis. Fought back quickly to get into the series and pops the Achilles, but the Pacers have been in control of this series, and it kind of goes into the Bucks' missed window, and they won a chip in this window, but they made a series of poor personnel moves, namely the Jrue Holiday situation that gave them Dame, because by sending Jrue Holiday to Portland, Portland immediately redirects Jrue Holiday to Boston, and now Boston's the big roadblock in the East that Milwaukee couldn't get by. And Boston has a title with Jrue Holiday. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, if they set with Jrue Holiday, I think if they would have traded Damian Lillard. Not Damian Lillard. They would have traded Chris Middleton instead of Damian Lillard. Because they end up using Chris Middleton in the first thing, Kyle Kuzma, who has been absolutely useless. But it was just mistake after mistake after mistake by the front office. They've been spending a ton of money. Ownership has been spending a boatload of money. I'm sure they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars in luxury tax trying to keep this thing competitive. And I think they need to just go ahead and let it wrap, basically. Start it over. It's okay. And I think it could be a situation where you have no assets. You have control of one first-round pick until 2031. You have control of one second-round pick, and you have until 2031. The Pelicans have more of your picks than you do. Portland has your picks. Washington has your picks. New Orleans has your picks. So if I'm them, I'm either trading Giannis to get my picks back, New Orleans, Washington, or Portland, screw what Giannis wants, or I'm trading Giannis to a place that's going to net me a lot of picks on there on my own. Where that place is, Brooklyn. Now, really, Brooklyn became the heavy favorite. He's like minus 200 right now to go to Brooklyn, last I seen. So if Brooklyn wants to give their draft back, because Houston, Brooklyn bought their draft back from Houston. So if Brooklyn then wants to turn their draft over to Milwaukee in exchange for Giannis, I'm sure the Bucks will do it, because that's going to be a high lottery pick this draft. If I'm the Nets, I don't give you this year's pick. We can start the count next year. Or we do swaps or something. But again, it's going to be very interesting to find out, to look at how Milwaukee figures this out, because to me, the Giannis era is over. It nets you a championship, but that's it. The last great big to be in Milwaukee was one championship, and that was it. And that was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then known as Lew Alcindor. So if I'm Milwaukee, I repeat history. I, for lack of a better term, sell them to the highest bidder. If it's Brooklyn, I want your drafts, all of them. I either want swaps or picks every year until 2031, because then I get my own stuff back. You know, and that's where I would start it. We're either going to do a picks or a outright picks or a swap rights from here until 2031. And if you don't want to do it this year, we'll do 2022 or 2032. Well, I get extra pick. That's the only way I can see you redoing it. And with Dame, we just kind of go, yeah, nah, buddy, we're going to suck. And you look at a boozer boy to start to rebuild with. So that is the interesting case there in Milwaukee. Knicks and Pistons has been a war. Both of the next two series, I'll kind of talk about them together. Knicks, Pistons, and Celtics Magic have been wars. They're just 3-1. Celtics and Magic have been a very competitive series. Magic are one star away. If I'm Kevin Durant, I look at Orlando. They are one bucket away. Like, they're just not talented enough. Paolo's a grown man, but they're just not talented enough. They're a bucket away from causing hell. If I'm KD, if I'm Giannis, I may look at Orlando to be the spot that's like, yo, I can show up, be 28 a night, and we could roar into the conference finals. Because they've been damn competitive with the Celtics. They just don't have enough talent. They're fighting them every scrap of the nail. They're playing great defense. They're all in their face. They take leads. It's just, they're just not good enough. Boston rolls off Peyton Pritchard as the ninth man, and you're like, well, you know what I'm saying? Well, he's with the sixth man. But I'm saying, you're rolling off Derek White and Peyton Pritchard and Drew Holiday and Porzingis and JB and Tatum and Horford. And it's like, it just keeps coming. And Orlando don't have that yet. It's a lot of Paolo Banqueros and guys. And then the Knicks and Pistons have been a very competitive series as well. Shout out Carl Anthony Towns for what he did at the end of game four. Shout out Jalen Brunson for having a mini Willis Reed moment where he sprains the ankle. And then comes back and puts up north of 30. So hell of a job by Jalen Brunson and the Knicks as they go up 3-1 as they head back to the Garden, and Boston's up 3-1 as they head back to the Garden. Oh wow, that's crazy. So Madison Square Garden for the Knicks and the Boston Garden for the Celtics. But that is a quick update on the NBA playoffs. Not so quick update on the NBA playoffs. Up next, we'll have our best for last, which is going to be talk about the WNBA. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about the WNBA in our best for last segment as they are in their training camp. Now, the WNBA women's basketball in general, we spoke about this last year, has one of the crazier turnarounds ever. Paige Beckers won a title, and then she was drafted a week later. And 1 week later, she was in professional basketball training camp. Like, that turnaround's not even as fast in the NBA. And the NBA has a pretty crazy one, too. The NBA goes from you win a title in, like, April, you get drafted in June, and you don't play summer league till like, July. You know what I'm saying? So even that turnaround's not as crazy. There's no sport like that where you can literally and Candace Parker did it 1 year. You can win the college championship and your first pro championship within 3 months of each other. And in that time, you've done training camp, you've won awards, you've had potential Olympic break, you've gone overseas. Like, you've done all kind of stuff in 3 months, as there's no other schedule like that in pro sports. And now the next class is filling that, led by Paige Beckers. Paige Beckers, Anissa Morrow, Georgia Amore, you know, so much talent in this draft. Isaiah James, Kiki Irifin, you know, there's so much talent in this draft, so much talent in this class. Haley Van Lith, you get a lot of star power in this class. Next year, class is going to be insane. Flaude Johnson, Lauren Betts, Raven Johnson, potentially Malaysia Fuwali, potentially Michaela Williams. You look at Samaya Smith. You look at the girl who just transferred to I can't think of her name right now, but the girl who transferred to South Carolina, who scored like 23 and 9 at Florida State. Juju won't be in that class. AZ Fudd's going to be in there. So that's going to be a loaded class next year as well. But this class is going to be very, very talented class. And then again, they're going through this crazy transition where you can win a college title in April and be cut from the pros in May because the WNBA has to make cuts. You can only have 12 players. Luckily, the Valkyrie came in this year, so kind of opened up a roster spot around the league. Maybe just one. So instead of a team having to cut five, it's four. But then you go to training camp, and it's like the Aces have 11 players that they're not going to move. So five rookies are maybe showing up for one spot. You know, and there's no WNBA G League. Like, if you get cut, you're now on your agent going, get me overseas. Either get me overseas or get me into Unrivaled. And with so many stars enjoying Unrivaled and the way it was set up and the training facilities they had and so on and so forth, like, there's only 36 Unrivaled spots. So, you know what I'm saying? So there's a lack of availability with a growth of ability in the women's game. I think Unrivaled is going to expand. I think Unrivaled, they're going to do centralized Miami one more year, and then they're going to start traveling or representing markets and cities. Honestly, I think they would do better just being a summer league, like an in-house league, where for 8 weeks you live in Miami. Because a lot of times, look at the name that they had. Those women have endorsements. They have set home somewhere else for 2 months, lock the door and fly to Miami and play 3-on-3 and then fly back. And you would have made $150,000, $200,000. Hell, you got to say it all week. They don't practice much. I noticed that pretty early. They didn't practice much in Unrivaled. I mean, they showed up a week in advance, maybe 2 weeks in advance, maybe a week in advance. They did a couple scrimmages and then they played. And they only played on the weekends. So you would see like Chelsea Gray like in New York with like Asia Wilson on like a Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't have to be down back to Unrivaled until like Thursday. So it was pretty pretty loose as far as how they were operating the schedule. So I think that's gonna be a very popular thing that's going to go on continuing. But again, the WNBA with this crazy schedule, good luck to the ones who are trying to make rosters. It's hard. It's the hardest league to make. And I just hope that we have a great WNBA season. But, of course, we'll talk about them a lot more as they get closer and get actually rolling. But up next, I'm sorry. My bad. Not up next. Thank you guys for joining me. My bad. I was on a roll there. Thank you guys for joining me. Again, it's been 2 months-ish since the last time I did a show. So I'm glad to be back. I'm back in the booth. Look out for the JTS After Dark YouTube show, which I'll be recording in about 30 minutes. So I'll be getting off the audio, jumping right onto the YouTube show. But this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.